You're listening to Afternoons with Josh Zepps on ABC Radio.
It's 26-3. Have you heard about the phenomenon of hyper-sexist male influencers, social media content creators, getting bazillions of views on social media and potentially influencing boys and young men here in Australia? There's one British kickboxer turned Big Brother contestant turned online provocateur who was recently banned from Instagram and Facebook for saying things like women belong in the home and that they are a man's property. Here's some of what he sounds like.
But I said that if a woman is going out with a man, she belongs to that man. That's his woman. So she wants to do OnlyFans. She owes him some money because she's his. Yes.
Well, now after all of this hoo-ha, after him being cancelled from Facebook and Instagram, he's announced that he's setting up a charity to protect women against domestic violence. What's going on? It's easy to say that young males are drawn to this stuff because masculinity is toxic. But does that kind of demonization of young men actually help? Or does it make young males act up? What exactly is missing in our conversation about masculinity that could assist young men from not being attracted to these kinds of messages in the first place? Hunter Johnson spends a lot of time thinking about this. He's the founder and CEO of The Man Cave. G'day, Hunter.
Hi, mate. Such a pleasure to be here.
What's The Man Cave?
So we run programs with teenage boys aged 12 to 16 that really focuses on their emotional development that can support them to have better relationships with themselves, better relationships with whoever they choose to engage with, and hopefully be better in their communities. And we do that through using a really diverse group of facilitators that come from a variety of backgrounds that appeals to the broad spectrum of masculinity that we work with in the school setting.
Were you surprised by the controversy over this bloke when he was getting kicked off Facebook and Instagram for making these points? I mean, I suppose a lot of people were shaking their heads in bafflement that these ideas would be popular in the first place.
Yeah, I think we're just at such an interesting time for masculinity more broadly. Like, I really think we're at an inflection point where, you know, we're in the era of that's post-Me Too. We have, you know, Donald Trump potentially returning back to the circuit. And also, you know, we have the mental health implications that we're starting to see riddled through, you know, particularly young people, also young men and older men. And on the other side of that, you know, the family violence statistics, which we're increasingly getting more familiar with, unfortunately, at the same time. And so whilst, you know, that's the context, I'm also not surprised because I think the last 2 years we've been through a global trauma as a group of people, as a humanity. And I think where our young men have been spending their time is on their devices. And if we think about the model of, you know, their social media algorithms, it's about capturing their attention. And when I think about this guy, Andrew Tate, he really is like a, you know, an equivalent of like a Trump for teenagers is probably the best way to say it. Because he's doing all the things that a teenager is told not to do. And that's interesting to them.
Right. Like what?
Well, I think even the comments that he says, you know, we just heard you reference just then. I think he's, you know, he's holding on to some very, very old school beliefs around masculinity. And the image that he portrays as well across social media is attention grabbing by its very nature. And we know, you know, that the social media algorithms, keep funneling in wherever we're spending our time and our attention. And, you know, a lot of work we're actually doing now, at Man Cave as well is on the radicalization of young men, which is happening earlier and earlier into some very, extreme beliefs. And it just has to come back to education and it has to come back to exposing these young men to healthy, diverse male role models.
Mm. Just some traffic information for you if you're listening to us in Bilgola Beach. On Barrenjoey Road at Bilgola Benz, there's a bad crash. Heavy traffic conditions in both directions. So avoid Barrenjoey Road at Bilgola Benz in Bilgola Beach. 1-300-222-702 is the phone number. Look, I'd love to hear from you about how you articulate masculinity to the other blokes in your life, especially if they're young males. Do you have a son or a grandson? Have they acted up or seemed to be sexist? Or conversely, have they seemed to be cowed, not wanting to be a bad guy, thinking that all of their, I suppose, masculine urges and impulses towards playfulness have to be subsumed by in their attempt to be a good citizen. How are you dealing with this? 1-300-222-702 is the phone number. The text line is 0467-922-702. As we try to articulate a positive vision of masculinity that doesn't demonize young men in ways that could actually push them towards some of these extremists. Hunter, it's easy to, I mean, as I said in the introduction, the worst possible explanation for why young men are drawn towards sexists online is because masculinity is toxic, and then that's just the end of the conversation and you put a full stop on it. I've had many an argument on my podcast about this with some of my friends and colleagues who are on the more extreme feminist end of the spectrum here, and they basically articulate a vision of masculinity, which is that fundamentally males are aggressive and violent and toxic, and that that has to be suppressed and kind of beaten or shamed out of us. I just don't think that that's constructive or useful.
I come from a similar point of view, Josh. I think the stories that we tell ourselves are often the stories that we live into. And that's my worry with this very, very complex and nuanced conversation. You know, it actually requires us to sit in rooms together and to consciously sit opposite others and have, you know, really healthy disagreements, you know, somewhat of a safe space to have unsafe conversations, because that's where the true lessons and learnings happen. And I think we're at a time where we've just got very differing belief systems running into each other. And it just has to come back to, I think, really just like a first principles of humanity, which is what are our collective shared values and how can I respect and treat you, although we might have a differing point of view. Fundamentally, in our collective humanity, we want the same thing, which is, you know, for us to feel good, for our loved ones to feel good, and for us to have a long, sustainable life. But we have to be prepared to get a bit messy along the way. And I think that's what's really interesting, you know, with the language that's out there at the moment, you know, even things like cancel culture, there's conversations around terms like rape culture, around toxic masculinity. You know, there's a lot of really edgy things. And what we see is that these boys in particular are hearing these narratives that, you know, they're bad or they're toxic, but they don't understand the nuance and the complexity behind some of these terms. And by nature, they don't also have a training ground to ask some of the potentially politically incorrect questions to support them on their learning journey, because they see people who are opening up, getting something wrong, and then getting cancelled. So there's just no opportunity for, one, the healing to take place, but two, also the education journey to know that the belief system they've grown up with, where can they get that healthily challenged and to learn and to evolve through that? We're really missing those training grounds.
What are some of those politically incorrect questions that young males feel they're not allowed to ask?
I think the classic one, which you've already referred to, is like, are all men toxic? You know, that's such a nuanced debate. And, you know, that's why we see the counterculture come back with the hashtag not all men, which is so nuanced, right? And I think what we really support boys to do is to understand that, yes, they are born into a system, right? They're born into a system, but the question is, it's not necessarily their fault they're born into that system, but it is their responsibility to have some education around that, to increase their ability to understand how they're consciously or unconsciously moving through the world, and ultimately give them the tools to access who they really are, their values, and to make informed choices. Mm. And delivering that in a way that's, you know, accessible, it's not too woke, it's not too virtue signaling, but ultimately just comes back to, you know, personal family values.
It is interesting, Hunter. We're speaking with Hunter Johnson, who is the founder and CEO of The Man Cave, which tries to encourage adolescent boys and men, young men, to have positive ideas of masculinity. This is all off the back of this influencer and this content creator who was banned from Facebook and Instagram for being incredibly wildly sexist. And we're trying to dig into why that has appeal and whether there are better ways of articulating what it means to be a man to young people than the ones that we're currently using. 1-300-222-702 is the phone number. I'd love to hear from you if you're a parent or a grandparent or just someone who in your life, in your peer group, you've tried to sort of nudge the vision of what being a good man means. How did you do it? 1-300-222-702 is the phone number. But Hunter, you just mentioned like not all men, right? I mean, the hashtag not all men has become something that is deserving of an eye roll in polite company now, right? So now it's just now it's only ever regarded as a forbidden way. I mean, you'll be pilloried for saying not all men. Now, if you're using it as a way to change the conversation about taking collective responsibility for the misdeeds of sexual harassers or sexual abusers, then of course, yeah, not all men is disgusting. But if you're using it to make the point that there are constructive things that masculinity can be responsible for, and we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater, then even then, there is still a huge stigma amongst, you know, progressive right-thinking circles for making that what I would have thought a generation ago was a fairly banal point.
I think that's a really wise point, Josh. Yeah, I think, and even if I watch the arc of, you know, the feminist movement for a long time, it was, you know, get out of the way, men. You've had your chance and you've abused it. Now get out of the way. And sure, that belief system still exists in some communities, which it sounds like you and I both have some access to. But what the other thing is I'm noticing in the conversations we're having is that there are, you know, some really influential, powerful women and also people who are just great members in the community who are saying, oh, we want the good men to come with us in this pursuit of equality, which is a really interesting opening, I think, in the zeitgeist. And I just think, you know, large scale social change happens often from opportunistic circumstances that have been bubbling away for a little while. So I think a great example is the work that Chanel Contos has done on consent education. Like that was something which was bubbling under the surface for a while. She leveraged her social media platform to get a pool of signatures right in time for, you know, an election cycle or, you know, budgets being announced, and then, you know, created significant scale change all the way up to the top and has received, you know, a lot of funding to, you know, inform people about consent education, in particular young men. And so, yeah, my question is, like, coming back to the anchoring you said at the beginning, is what is this positive future state of masculinity that we are inspired by for those people that identify as men, that women get inspired by, that non-binary people get inspired by? Who is it that we look to for this? Like, what's it going to take? How much more pain do we have to go through before we realize that there are some things we need to let go of? There are some things we need to relearn or unlearn, but also, you know, what is that? What is that hope that we're all moving towards that we can collectively get around? And that's what I find really interesting.
1-300-222-702 is the phone number. How do you construct a good vision of manhood, of what it means to be a man, without downplaying and denigrating the aspects of masculinity that are generally regarded as being toxic, perhaps, you know, a drive for ambition or a drive to mansplaining or manspreading or whatever the particular bugbear is of the day? And how do you articulate a vision that encourages young men, young males and boys, to think of themselves with pride and also with dignity and also with care towards the fairer sex? 1-300-222-702 is the phone number. The text line, 0467-922-702. I'd especially love to hear from women about this. If you're a mother of a boy, how do you navigate it? Robert in Renwick, g'day.
Hello, how are you?
Terrific. What do you reckon? Go for it, Robert.
Yeah, hello, how are you today?
Good.
Yeah, this is difficult talking on the radio.
Nah.
People do it all the time and you go, oh. I'm a father of two boys, or two young men now, and I've been a primary school teacher for 40-odd years, and this is a question that I've, you know, dealt with in my own mind through that entire time. I felt like our society lacks a rite of passage for boys to become men, something that was once part of, you know, sort of what we would call less civilized cultures. They had these rituals and they had these ways that boys saw themselves going from boys and youth to men. And all we seem to have is getting your license and drinking. And I think we seriously need to look at this as a society. How do we nurture young boys and youth into men?
Yeah, thank you, Robert. Hunter, what would a rite of passage look like, a 21st century rite of passage?
I think also just the one thing I'll pick up is just in the framing there around, you know, less civilized cultures. I think, I don't know, this wasn't Robert's intention to say this, but it's like we got to really measure what success is. Is success, you know, continuity of a species for 100,000 plus years? That's pretty good civilization for me. And then secondly, yeah, I think there's particularly the fact that we are so privileged to live on Australian land alongside our First Nations people. There is so much gold and wisdom that has been untapped and unrecognized there. And then secondly, you know, rites of passage are a huge part of our work at Bankhead. The idea that for a young person to shift in their psychology, they need to go through an experience, an initiatory experience, that where they let go of the boy behavior and they step into the healthy man or healthy adult psychology behavior. And a simple way to think about that is, you know, teenage boy behavior is I am center of the universe and my life is about me and it's about power and it's about control and it's about dominance. But healthy man or healthy adult psychology is I am part of the universe. My life is about service. It's about community. It's about trust. It's about supporting and protecting those most dearest to me. And I think we only need to look at who's running, you know, respected companies, countries across the world to look at the state of psychology that some of these people are in. And, you know, we've run programs alongside Dr. Arnold Rubenstein and the Rites of Passage Institute up in Byron Bay for a number of years where men or male identifying role models take boys from the ages of like 12 to 16 out into the bush for 3 to 4 days where they get to hear stories from their elders around what life was like when they were 14 or 15, their experiences with things like sex and death and grief, but also their family stories. The boys are then given a challenge. Now, the challenge used to be they'd go hunt a lion or in some communities it'd be a circumcision. But the idea is it would test this kind of sense of immortality that teenage boys particularly seem to have, where they test boundaries. And they would, again, in our context, it's generally spending a night, you know, in the bush where they get to be with themselves for a period of time. And then they're given a task to think about what are the behaviors they're going to let go and who are they going to be when they return. And of course, we're around them at this point in time. They don't know that, but we're around them in the bush. We welcome them back in and they share with us what is it and who are they stepping into? What are the values? What's most important to them? And then the most important part of that is they get honored for their unique gifts and talents. Mm. They get seen by the man who brought them and they get welcomed into the next stage of their emotional and social development. And the most important part of rite of passage is actually that the community recognizes the transition. It's not just someone who goes off on this experience and comes back and is met with people treating them the same way. A community welcomes them back. And so often we'll march the boys back down into, you know, a community town hall where there's about 50 to 100, you know, family and women there. And we welcome them back in. And it's a beautiful, beautiful experience. And I think to Robert's point, you know, what does it look like to get down in the mainstream? And I think that's a great challenge for us to think through.
Yeah, that's beautiful. We're speaking with Hunter Johnson from The Man Cave. It's coming up to 3:08. This is about these social media influencers, these content creators who are spewing this very, very sexist vision of masculinity and getting a lot of views and getting a lot of clicks. We're trying to understand why are young men attracted to this? Is it just because masculinity is toxic and young men are always going to want to be sexist? Or is it because they're feeling unself expressed, they're feeling confused, they're feeling like they are not respected and that their masculinity is sort of sinful or evil, and so they're branching out in other ways and finding these dysfunctional visions of masculinity and are being drawn towards sexism. So what kind of vision of masculinity and manhood could we articulate for young people that doesn't see them, I suppose, getting perverted into these different interpretations of what it means to be a man? 1-300-222-702 is the phone number. One person on the text line, Hunter, says boys being separated from girls at private schools from the age of 12 to 18 goes a long way to defining their views of women that carry through to their lives. Another person, Michael on the Central Coast, says, I think our problem is in thinking masculinity or femininity need to exist in the first place. We should be raising boys and girls to see gender as pretty irrelevant and stop gendering different behaviours, appearances and activities. Apart from biological differences, there are only people. Hunter, does that make sense? I mean, this is another part of the confusion at the moment, isn't it? Because in the conversations around gender, we want to be as respectful as possible towards people who are differently gendered, who are either not on the binary at all or who are transgender. And yet a 13-year-old boy is being flooded with testosterone, and that does something to him in terms of his outlook and his feelings that he has to have a context for being able to understand.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all just in this interesting point for gender. I think, you know, this seems to be the speed upon which things are changing is, you know, up there with some of the quickest that I've definitely heard about in even studying history. And, you know, particularly from a man cave setting, you know, we've noticed after the 2.5 years of COVID, you know, how fast the gender conversation has evolved in the 2.5 years of like not being able to deliver as many programs due to school closures. So I think we're just like, we're all in this, and I think we're all uncovering and learning as we go. And that's why, coming back to our point earlier, I think we do need to have these environments where we can ask the questions and learn and not be seen as a bad person or anything like that. I think also, you know, we also exist in a context where, you know, we do currently divide people, whether you want to call it identity politics or not, by their gender. It's just been in part of our culture for a very long time. So that's where we're at. Mm. I think the second thing I'll just say is, you know, the way that I relate to this is that we have masculine, energies and feminine energies in us, whether we identify as male, feminine, a male, female, or non-binary. These are just, energetic, like, traits that sometimes get attached to manhood. So masculine energy gets attached to manhood, and sometimes feminine energy gets attached to female people. Mm. And so I think that sometimes adds a level of complexity. But yeah, ultimately, you know, we are coming back to just being people. Yes, I agree. But also I know there are certain ways that, you know, you can educate a young man that will definitely resonate with them around certain topics, and they can learn certain lessons from male identifying people versus other people. And I think, you know, that just happens. If you find yourself in a male only environment, you're having a very different conversation to, you know, if you're in a female only environment.
And there's a text about that on the text line saying there's a great meme about the fact that we've taught girls to be more like boys, but we're yet to teach boys to be more like girls. And by this, the texter writes, I mean the benefits of all the genders having access to all of the traits. Until we loosen the binary and let girls be assertive, not bossy, and boys be gentle and kind without being labelled gay, then we've got work to do. Another person says, give me a break. Feminists never said get out of the way to men. You don't have to put feminism down to make the case for your good work, says Catherine. Catherine, I have spoken to many very prominent feminists who say almost exactly that. I mean, one of Australia's most prominent feminists was responsible for the hashtag Kill All Men. She and I have had a good argument about that on my podcast, which you can check out if you doubt it. Another person says, I'm an old privileged white male. I have a 17-year-old daughter who I support wholeheartedly in her strong feminism. The problem is she now sees me as the enemy, even though I support her. I don't know how to get her to see that I'm actually trying to help. Another person says, I have a daughter and a son. I'm educating both of them about consent. I believe myself to be a good man who'd always stood up for what was right. But the language used these days doesn't make me feel safe enough to even join the conversation. I just feel like I'll be lumped in with the bad, and so I don't bother. I'll stick to my kids and help them, but that's it. Hunter, a final thought before we need to leave you?
So thanks for the opportunity, Josh, and for opening up the conversation. You know, I think we need to have more conversations like this in a public setting and give ourselves permission to get messy and to hear other points of view. And I think my invitation, you know, I say this as much to myself as anyone else, is like, let's learn from the discomfort. And, you know, I think, how do we use this as an opportunity to create a better society, a better Australia for everyone?
Great to talk to you. Thanks, Hunter. Have a good one.
Thanks. Thanks. Cheers. Thank you.
That's Hunter Johnson from The Man Cave. Discussing the ways that they try to articulate a vision of masculinity that isn't this binary between thinking that that all masculinity is toxic, or that it's fantastic.